You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's news project. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on Thursday, March 12th. Also, a great pleasure to be joined here in the studio by two old colleagues from days gone by. Great to have with us today Howard Weiss-Tisman, who is the Southern Vermont reporter for Vermont Public Radio, and also Jim Therrien, who is a writer and reporter for the Bennington Banner. Gentlemen, thank you very much for making the time to be in today, squeezing it in between, I know, some busy schedule. So I guess the obvious starting point for us today is the coronavirus. A couple of days ago when I was sitting down thinking about what some of the topics were that we would talk about, I figured, well, you know, that's a big deal story. We should start off with that. And I figured might be a couple of minutes of conversation about that. But wow, this is what you call a fast-moving, kind of head-snapping sort of story. I guess, Jim, Bennington County sort of got in the news in terms of that with
Ground Zero,
having the first patient diagnosed with the virus at the Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. What else do we know about all of that?
Well, it's pretty hard to tell what that actually means as far as the number of cases, but it does seem that this virus is spread already, and I know in Berkshire County in Mass, just over the border, they had, I think, five people and four, maybe 50 nurses at Berkshire Medical Center under watch. Hmm. So there were a lot of cases around, and probably the testing is really what we haven't had, and there must be more, I would think. How bad that is in terms of people getting sick, it's pretty hard to tell. We have that one person, I guess, was, I think, 80 years old and had been recovering in the hospital. Concrete facts about what's going to happen next, it's pretty hard to predict. And it's unclear to me what whether this is really going to diverge a lot from some of the other flus out there that we've had already, but we didn't have the internet to kind of get things out really fast. So I don't know how much that influences what's going on. Nationally, though, it's really a disaster, it seems like.
And yeah, pretty coordination amazing. And the worst is yet to come.
I know. I mean, I was looking at my 401k and keep Trump off TV. That's all I would say.
Okay. And we were talking earlier just how quickly this story is moving. As we're taping today, the second case was recognized late yesterday up in Chittenden County. Colleges are closing across the state. I think Sterling College announced today was closing. I think Bennington College is still open as we're going to tape. But I wouldn't be surprised. Events are canceled. Colleges are being canceled.
Williams College.
Elementary schools and high schools, again, as we're going to tape, there aren't any widespread closures in Vermont, but in other parts of the country that's happening. So this is a really fast-moving story. Before we started taping, we talked about, I can't remember, another story that had such an impact that was moving so quickly that you can barely keep up with it, what's going on. So I think it's going to be here for certainly a little while.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's got to go through a cycle, at least a cycle of some kind. I was thinking, too, that all these things that you think are going on, like the NBA canceling, and I hear there's a lot of rumors at the State House that they're going to try to jam things through fast or something might happen like that and close down early. I mean, all these things, I think the chamber had something from Bennington. They had something that was canceled.
Special Olympics at PICO have been canceled.
It's pretty amazing.
Courts are sort of not going to be delayed.
I noticed
trials,
the calendar on the courts. Superior.
So we're bracing for it. I mean, I don't know if we're ready for it, if the hospitals are ready for it, medically and everything else. But I feel like consciously, we're all ready for it. I mean, this has been talked about. This is out there. I think everyone is just, you know, holding tight and listening, washing hands, And seeing how this all plays out.
Not shaking hands.
Not shaking hands.
I'm really hoping that we get a bunch of, ton of money, I think, from the federal government, because you're going to have all kinds of expenses that you never had before. And then you have the issue of people, you want them to stay home. They should be getting paid leave or something.
Right. I mean, that sort of sparked a renewed debate around that, that people should get some sort of paid.
And here you go. Leave. Quebec just declared a state of emergency.
So. Yeah.
To be continued.
What's going to be interesting to me is, I mean, I guess if there's, I don't know if it's fair to call it a silver lining or not, but I mean, I was thinking the other day, wow, what if this was happening in October here in Vermont at the height of the tourist season, fall foliage, when billions of dollars come into the state?
Right, right.
That would really put a, what's the right word, a damper on things. Right. I mean, at least in March, while I'm sure there are going to be a lot of businesses that are affected and ski areas, I suppose, but at least ski season is sort of winding down. It's it's kind of that in-between mud season almost. So I suppose one could say it could be worse, but it's certainly going to be bad enough. And the long-term economic impact is going to be interesting to see.
Well, we don't have any cruise ships, luckily, but it does seem like it's going to totally throw the economy completely off for a long time. Yeah. So many things have been stalled. All these in the debt among companies. You see that story that the high amount of debt,
right?
Almost like
right.
the housing bubble right. from
shades of 2008.
These companies expect the money to keep rolling in, and
right.
as soon as it stops, everything just
same thing
stops.
Kind of thing that happens every time.
Yeah.
It seems
it's like living from paycheck to paycheck.
Right. I mean, right. It's coming right during a presidential election, so.
Right. Yeah, anyway.
A lot of tentacles.
We may touch upon a little bit later. Well, okay, as Howard said, to be continued, because this story clearly has a way to go yet.
And has legs, as we say in the business.
Hopefully everyone is able to get the information they need to at least to lower their risk as much as possible. I guess the other big story we probably would have been talking about, and I guess we will, town meeting ended a week or so ago, so we sort of digested pretty much whatever the takeaways were on that. But just to kind of go around, I guess, Howard, let's take advantage of having you here and telling us what your feelings were from the town meetings held over in Windham County. Anything special or unusual come out over the other side of the mountain? Or
it was a quiet town meeting, but there was always a couple of quirky issues that are worth watching. Brattleboro voted on a non-binding issue about moving to a mayoral form of government. There was a lot of talk leading into it. Community TV shows and a lot of campaigning, etc. In the end, it went down in flames. It was 1,722 to 529, so not much support for that change. A lot of the discussions were the same, that the voters would have accountability and a mayoral would be more accountable to the voters, but Brattleboro didn't go for it. There were some interesting discussions in Vernon. On July 1st, the solid waste law, the next phase of Vermont solid waste law changes. You're not going to be able to throw compost out starting July 1st. And so Vernon had a little discussion about pay-as-you-throw and how much money to put into their curbside pickup. In the end, they decided to keep their pay-as-you-throw system and to put an extra $100,000 or so into recycling to kind of keep their system going, but I think a lot of communities over the next few months are going to try to figure out how to move into this next phase of dealing with the compost. The Deerfield Valley voted for their communications union district. That happened a couple places around the state. I know there was one here in Bedington. Mm-hmm. There was also one up in the Northeast Kingdom, and this is a way for municipalities to join together to try to bring broadband into some of the underserved areas. And in Deerfield, Marlboro, Halifax, Whitingham, and Wilmington all voted to join a district. So they're going to try to formalize the agreement and go after some state money to try to bring broadband.
Feasibility grants,
And lastly, Dummerston has bats in their town hall.
Uh-oh. Perfect.
Dummerston approved $1,500 to take care of their
Excellent.
Bats.
Excellent. Oh. All right.
So that's a quick sum up.
I hate having to duck for bats.
Bats in the belfry.
Yeah, right.
Well, Jim, we were talking before we went on there a little bit about the Bennington results. Kind of intriguing.
Well, it surprised us a little bit that the 1% option tax went down in flames. And it had four different questions on each of the categories of sales that you could add 1% to.
So they had separate votes on what, the sales, meals, rooms, alcohol?
Retail, alcohol, okay. Rooms, meals. And every one of them went down, especially the retail, which is would have brought in the largest amount of money.
And I didn't follow. What was the, why do you think there was such opposition?
There were certain people that kind of high profile and opposing a lot of things in town government. And I think that helped. They were all over the internet. There was at least two candidates of the six for select board who were against it.
But the argument was that the government would take the money?
Well, they would take the money and use it, the wrong way or something like that. But it was $1.3 million almost that could have been added. And I think the select board was all set to do something every budget season. They would have a public hearing or two.
They were ready to spend
it. To decide how to spend it and then commit to doing that way. But that wasn't good enough, I guess. People just didn't trust them. And there seems to be a lot of mistrust from certain battles over the years. There's a certain group that does not like Stu Hurd, who's been there almost forever as the town manager.
Over 20 years.
And they're always
now,
complaining
right?
about him, but a lot of other people, seems like the majority, I think, but support him. So there's distrust, and that came out. As soon as you mention tax, I guess that's what can happen. But I was kind of surprised it went down that much, because you would have had that money to put in every year. And a lot of it was going to be to promote the town and to do big projects, which they don't have money for now. So maybe something will come back later. Some of the opponents actually said, if you give us a project that that you want to spend that on, we'll probably vote for it. One idea was to buy the Southern Vermont College campus, and that got a lot of play, but that also might have some other buyers out there in the wind too. So
another town meeting next year comes around every year.
Yeah, if they come up with a project that they, or more than one project that they want to specifically spend it on, I think they probably could get it. And I think the town select board and I know Stu Hurd wants to bring it back. He said that right after the vote, but probably not in the same format.
Well, that's interesting because usually isn't a local option tax kind of pitched as a way to kind of soften property taxes?
That's exactly, that's the thing. They were going to use quite a bit, well, at least a portion of that. And that's what really surprised me, is that people didn't vote for it for that reason.
Right.
That would have been a reduction. It's gone up 2 or 3% or sometimes more every year. So you would think they would... Manchester just had, are you familiar with that recent, they completely did away with what would have been an increase in the property tax, I thought I read that.
Because of the money from the local
because
option tax?
Because they have this other revenue.
Right.
I know
right.
Wilmington started their local option tax a few years ago, and they're having a good time spending it.
Right, and that's, they do, I think, all projects that people apply for.
Right. And they have a big tourist economy there, of course, so a lot of that money is coming in from out of state, which is one of the arguments for it.
Well, the other argument, though, for it here even, is that Bennington has much more retail sales than Manchester, and it's the biggest town. People come here to buy things.
So you're talking about
one penny on a dollar or $1 on a hundred. So, I don't know how that seems like a big burden to me, but A lot of people thought so.
Well, I went to the Londonderry town meeting on Tuesday, and they had an extended debate on the same question, that there was a proposal.
People get really fired up, though.
Raise a 1% local option tax, and that was defeated. Went to a paper ballot. I think it was like a 2-1 march. Mm. I think 55-25, something like that. But the same argument. Well, the same argument. Well, no. It's 30% of it's going to go to the state anyway. People thought that was, like, you know, unfortunate, because that's for the administration.
Right.
And then there was a lot of disputing that, no, it really won't lower our property taxes. You know, the government will find a way to spend it and not reduce property taxes. Mm-hmm. And it was discussed for almost an hour.
Well, that is true, though, that a lot of people, even in favor of it, said if you don't do something else with the money, it's going to rise back up for the property tax. But if you put in some kind of a facility that will draw more visitors, do something else, recreation. There are a couple of projects that they'd like to do around Bennington. Then you improve your town, and your grand list will improve too. So just cutting the property tax alone would probably not last very long. It would rise back up.
Yeah. Well, shifting gears somewhat, Howard, you were telling us earlier about the student waiting study. Waiting study.
Yeah,
not students waiting,
what
but
they're waiting. For
waiting.
Right. I was in Montpelier
what's
yesterday.
Going on?
Well, this is a really important study that came out a couple months ago, and the Agency of Education asked for it. It's about 150 pages, and I know that education funding eyes. I can hear them glazing over through the cameras. But in a nutshell, the 150-page report said that Vermont student waiting study is it's not working right now. That poor rural towns that has a lot of poverty, they're paying a lot of money into the education system, and they're not getting as much back. So this report really laid it out, looking at data, looking at what low-income students cost to educate. And this report is putting together kind of a new formula, so that for every dollar you send up to Montpelier, you get X amount back. And it's very complex stuff, but basically, at the end of this report, there are quote-unquote winners and losers, and there are towns that are going to do better with it, and there are towns that are going to end up spending a lot more. And so what's happening now is that Laura Sibilia, who's from the Deerfield Valley, is a big proponent of this study. And so the advocates right now are trying to push this through. And they're saying, hey, this is a 150-page study. You guys looked at this for a year and a half. The data is clear. We have to take care of this now. But there's just not a lot of appetite in Montpelier to move ahead. We're just coming out of Act 46. Mm. We've got big changes on board with special education funding. And there's a feeling like school districts just need to catch their breath for a year or two. But the advocates are saying a year or two for kids in second and third grade, that's a lot of time, yeah. You know, to keep putting this off. Even coming out of Act 46, the most struggling districts are having a really tough time right now. Some of the tax increases are just eye-popping. In Marlboro, in Windham, I mean, the school budgets are up like double digits, and people are just freaking out. So in Montpelier yesterday, there was a press conference, and there was a hearing with the Senate Education Committee. Crossover is this Friday. Mm. And so the advocates are trying to get this included in another bill for at least the legislature to say, which they like to do, let's study it one more year. Yeah. Let's put together a plan so that if we move ahead on this next year, what's it going to look like? There's not even a lot of encouragement to do that. So we're going to have to see what happens at the end of this week, where it goes.
So this is where students are, it's not exactly a student, a weighted student is not exactly an actual student. It's a student who may have learning disabilities or English as a foreign language, poverty background.
Right.
And
right.
So those students are considered more expensive, I guess, to educate.
Right. High school students get a little extra, too.
So you could be a 1-point-something student as opposed to a 1.0 student.
And they want to change that formula so that low-income kids, English second language kids, you get a little bit more back. So we're going to see where it goes. So it's a big issue. It's a lot to wrap your head around, but it's
well, of course, and at a time when the legislature may be accelerating its adjournment date, trying to get something like that through when they've got several other things that have been kind of in the pipeline for a while. And in an election year, could be. Speaking of elections,
very difficult.
We have a new candidate for governor from our neck of the woods.
Patrick Winburn has is an attorney who has pretty much taken on insurance companies most of his career in personal injury lawsuits. He is a progressive Democrat running for that nomination. And he launched his campaign, well, late last month, but officially this month. And he has a lot of ideas that are very similar to Bernie Sanders. His, one of his, he's a very strong Sanders supporter. He thinks that we could reshuffle the deck, is what he calls it, as far as economic advantages or the benefits of the economy. And he wants to try to do that with, you know, with everyone up in Montpelier. He also wants to move quickly on raising the minimum wage, family leave, and things like that, which he says have been bottled up because the governor has vetoed many of these things, or either stalled it or vetoed it, that the House and Senate pass things like that and get stopped, and he wants to be the one to come in and uncork the bottle, he says. So, and he's also traveling around with his dog, I think a sheepdog, I'm not sure, but it's, and his daughter is the campaign manager, so I'm not sure, he's spending quite a bit on ads up in TV and around the state, so I don't know if, we'll see what happens. I know he's been at Burlington stations and and the radio, and I think he's traveling around quite a bit, spending quite a bit of money of his own. So we'll see what happens. But the kind of campaign, low key at first, maybe it's almost like, you know, the book Travels with Charlie, and you know, something could catch fire there. I think you never know. He's kind of he's soft spoken in a way, but he's also been in many trials around the state, so he's not he's not.
Not going to be a shrinking loyalist.
He's no, not at all. So, and he wins a lot of them, I know, because we've covered some.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. He's going to be competing with Rebecca Holcomb, the former education secretary.
Well, he's and, he's very David similar Zuckerman, in positions to lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how that's going to work out. And Siegel is that way too, right? Very similar.
Right.
She's more. She's running for lieutenant governor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Holcomb, too. I don't know exactly about, I guess I haven't followed her positions very closely.
She's pretty progressive.
Pretty progressive, yeah. I would think. Yeah. So it'll be interesting, but they'll all be in the same mix, and we'll see how it turns out with the voters.
Right. And the official filing deadline comes in April, and maybe there'll be more people.
It comes up pretty fast, though, isn't it? It's going to be August, right?
It'll be interesting to see. You know, of course, Governor Scott has not officially announced yet.
Right.
So
what do you hear about that?
I don't know. Just a lot of people are feeling. So I can't speculate. We're going to have to see.
Yeah.
And with all of this, again, coronavirus, how it's going to affect the polls and how it's going to affect his decision. If he's, you know, embroiled in a serious crisis, it could, you know, impact his decision if he feels like it's not a good time for him to bail, if the state's right in the middle of this. But those are decisions he has to make. There was a funny press conference from Montpelier where a reporter was asking him if he was still having fun. And Governor Scott was like, fun. This job, it's never been fun. You know, that's not why I got into this.
He could still be
my race car.
He could be a stock car driver still. Yeah. I see quite a few guys in that the dirt track scene are his age and older.
He's still popular. He's still popular.
It would be a shock and a half if he didn't run for re-election, I think.
I wouldn't say a shock and a half. I'd say a shock. I mean, he's been there, what, two or?
Two terms.
Third term.
Which is kind of normal.
It's brutal. It's a, you
but
know.
It's a hard,
again, yeah. he, it's, it, it's, it looked like he was, it was wearing on him a little bit in that one press conference where he said, like, you know, it's not fun, and but so we'll see.
Well,
on the presidential level, just real quick, our junior senator seemed to had a kind of a bad week following a, well, 2 weeks in a row where things kind of reversed. It's amazing. If we were talking, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we would have said, wow, Bernie has, like, got the pathway to the nomination.
That's incredible.
And almost overnight, it seemed, just basically starting with the South Carolina primary, all of that reversed itself, and he got kind of pounded pretty badly on Super Tuesday. And then this past Tuesday, losses in Michigan, which was a state he was, I think, looking forward to. And he won 2 out of the 6 states. But that's not enough to really shift the dynamic around.
I'm surprised more at Biden being as popular as he looks to be, at least in the primaries. And I hear didn't he have a 40-point lead in Florida now or something like that?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what's going to happen now, but you have the virus out there. Are they going to campaign very much? And they have that debate. The only thing I would hate for them to do is to fight too much and split the party. And
well, also looking how this really coronavirus is going to impact how President Trump is doing.
Well, Trump is really going to be, yeah.
You know, there are people on the bubble who are maybe deciding between President Trump and the Democrat. And depending how President Trump comes out of this, he could come out looking great. He could handle it, or he could totally have it blow up in his face. So I think there's definitely going
to
happen.
It's really
hard
to see how it would totally end by November. But maybe it would be good if it did, but it's hard to see that. But I have a feeling that a lot of people just seem to have made up their mind that Biden is Mr. Common Collected or whatever they think he is, and that's what would be good to run in the fall. I mean, that's my impression, and I don't think they're ready for too much change. Maybe that's another factor that in the recent results, because it seemed pretty dramatic in the past two groups of primaries.
Yeah, and remember, though, that people, when Bernie won, it was Iowa and New Hampshire, and everyone was saying they're mostly white states, they're small states, they're rural states. So I don't know if the Biden campaign was really prepared for such a turnaround, but this is kind of their long game they've been playing the whole time, is like, just sit tight, you know, let it go. We've got South Carolina.
And I think he was a little nervous, though, by the time that came
around. Yeah, yeah. He didn't look good before it, but he seems like he's really...
He gave a pretty good speech after the recent...
He just looked like a different person after South Carolina.
Well, he looked pretty very calm after this last one, and gave a kind of a good presidential-style speech. I mean, Bernie gave a pretty good speech yesterday, too. I just hope they can come to accommodation without having to... Well, knock each other.
That's going to be the next test.
If they're going to have a debate
Biden
on Sunday.
Sanders supporters can join forces.
Didn't work so well last time. So.
Yeah, I mean, in 2016, it didn't seem like there was a closing of the ranks, so to speak, as much as, let's say, certainly Hillary Clinton would have wanted. But I guess we still have a long way to go.
It's quite a ways.
Like the election's been going on for a long time already.
I mean, they don't even have. When are they supposed to have the convention? Will they even have it?
But that's another question.
July or so?
I mean, well, how will campaigning events be?
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, in 2 months or so, as I understand it anyway, this may well be, well, assuming the country gets itself organized and test kits are available and hospitals are able to supply the resources we need, we could hopefully be thinking, oh, well, that was something.
I would love to see the government do to pay people to stay home or if they test positive. To have cover that cost when companies don't cover it, I think that would probably stabilize the economy right away, something like that. But not saying you're gonna stop everybody from coming from Europe, whatever he said last night. I mean, that scares people.
Right, and plus, you know, most people can't work remotely. I mean, there may be some people who can and don't miss a beat, but. The majority of people who are working the certain service industries or at a factory, I mean,
right? You have to have some kind of paid leave, I think. Otherwise, this is going to get really bad.
Mm-hmm. People can't afford not to work for more than a day or two.
Yeah,
a lot of people can't.
You can't tell them to go home because they probably won't.
Well, much more we could talk about, I'm sure, but we are just about out of time. I just wanted to thank, once again, Howard Weiss-Tisman from Vermont Public Radio and Jim Therrien from the Bennigan Banner for being with us today and filling us in on all the backstories.
Lots to talk about.
Thank you very much for being with us today, and we'll see you again the next time. This has been Press Pass on GNET TV. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.